Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is an RNZ podcast.
In the meantime, Mr. Wheeler came back from his tea break and, you know, wondered where Mr. Blomfield was, went out the back into the alcove and found him lying with his head towards the safe, and he thought that he'd just fallen over, maybe he tripped over something, but he noticed all the blood coming out and he realised that he had been attacked.
Hi, I'm Jesse Mulligan, and this week on Crimes NZ, we have a real whodunit. In 1931, Auckland pharmacist Arthur Blomfield was bludgeoned to death at Mackay's Dispensary on Wellesley Street. One of New Zealand's best-known true crime writers, Scott Bainbridge, has looked back at this case and into who could be the murderer.
Well, Arthur Blomfield, he was age 75 and he was quite well known in Auckland medical circles. He was New Zealand's oldest pharmacist in 1931, and prior to opening up his dispensary in Mackay's, he actually had a string of pharmacies around Auckland, and prior to that he spent majority of his younger years over in Sydney, where he built up and ran Sydney's largest pharmacy. So sort of throughout his career he downgraded. He owned a string of pharmacies around Auckland, and then at the age of 70 he thought he'd better start taking it easy and just restricted it to one and took over the lease of Mackay's, which is perfectly situated in Wellesley Street in the Pacific Buildings. So, you know, he was catered to the workers of Auckland, because it was right on the corner of Queen Street and Wellesley Street.
And, I described him as elderly. I mean, 75 in 1931 is a bit different to 75 in 2022, right? He would have been quite an old person.
Yeah, but he was reasonably fit, and he had represented, when he moved to Australia, he had represented Australia in swimming competitions. He was right into his boats. He had a launch himself in Auckland. And he was the president of the captain of the Rob Roy Canoe Club. And so he was still out on the water, even at that age, at 75. So he was in perfect health.
Mm. Fit and still working. He worked at Mackay's Dispensary with a junior, Mr. Wheeler. And what happened on Friday the 30th of October 1931?
Well, I'm saying that the attack wasn't spontaneous, that it was pre-planned, because Mr. Wheeler, the assistant, had just popped out for his tea break at 4:45, and all the workers started leaving work at 5 o'clock. But just prior to 5 o'clock, a man entered the store, and it was thought that he was after the till. Certainly not long after 5 o'clock, a customer, Mr. Pollock, entered the store and noticed that there was nobody behind the counter. So he sat down in the waiting area, which was just a small store, and then a man came out and said, "Oh, have you been waiting here long?" And Mr. Pollock said, "No, I've only just got here." And he said, "Well, he," referring to Mr. Blomfield, "he'll be out in about 5 minutes." And so the man exited the store, and in the meantime, Mr. Wheeler came back from his tea break and, you know, wondered where Mr. Blomfield was, went out the back into the alcove and found him lying with his head towards the safe, and he thought that he'd just fallen over, maybe he tripped over something, but he noticed all the blood coming out and he realised that he had been attacked. And certainly when he came back out to the counter, the till was on the floor and there were a few coins scattered here and there, but the bulk of the money was missing.
And was Mr. Blomfield still alive at that point?
No, he was teetering on the brink, and when the police and the ambulance were, or the medical people did arrive there, he was in a bit of a lucid state, and he was sort of shouting out, "No, George, don't do it," or they thought it was either George or Joe, so it sounded like he was trying to, tell somebody to go away, and he was flailing his arms around. And then that's when he lapsed into proper unconsciousness, and he died about six hours later.
And, pretty sad. 16 wounds to his head, lots of brain injuries, and I imagine much less that Auckland Hospital could do back in those days than they might be able to do now. What do we know what he was murdered with?
Look, it was either a hammer or a car spanner. It was something heavy, and certainly when I look at the injuries, which are available in the archived file, and he was, to say that he was bludgeoned to death is a bit of an understatement. So he was beaten severely. That the injuries that he received, were non. Yeah, you just wouldn't survive. It was just a ferocious beating, and that's what made the headlines too, because in 1931 we're talking about the Depression, and money was hard to come by, and there were a lot of robberies committed, but people tended to do them without too much violence, because these were in the days where a murder was an execution. You got hanged for such a crime. So, but this was a frenzied attack, and it's hard to say whether it was meant to be a murder or whether the killer just wanted to beat him into submission.
Yeah, we've unfortunately got pretty sensitised to violent murders, but I imagine this was a huge story in 1931.
It made headlines. I covered the Elsie Walker death, and also the arrest of Bill Bailey for the Lakey murder a couple of years later. And because the Blomfield murder went unsolved, there was talk that maybe Bill Bailey was responsible, and that's the first ever indication in New Zealand history of a serial killer. So the term serial killer didn't come into being until about the 1960s or 70s. But with Blomfield's death, and there's also a murder of a taxi driver a couple of years later, they all, the papers all tried to link the fact that they were unsolved to Bill Bailey, when, Bill Bailey may have been in Auckland at the time, but there was no proof pointing him to that crime.
So from what you can work out, the killer planned this, and that he waited for when Arthur Blomfield was going to be alone. And what else can we sort of work out from the circumstantial evidence about what happened and when?
Well, it was pretty brazen, the robbery, because, he came in just before five, and sort of 5 o'clock, was when everybody was leaving the offices to rush home, and certainly Mr. Pollock was one of those who was, left work at five, and he was at the dispensary at 5:03. So the killer ran the risk of being seen or even caught, but, he didn't. And in fact, Mr. Pollock, there was blood throughout the alcove in the dispensary, so the police believe that the killer would have had a fair bit of blood splatters on himself. But Mr. Pollock certainly didn't see anything, and who we believe was the killer that exited the store talked very calmly, certainly didn't give anything away, and nobody in the streets were, had picked up on any person with bloodstains. But the interesting fact, there was a clue left behind. So before Mr. Wheeler left the store, he left a briefcase on the counter, and when he returned and he saw Mr. Blomfield lying sprawled on the floor, the suitcase was on the top of the safe, and it was open, and there was a fish and chip package on the inside the briefcase. So it was thought that that the killer had bought his fish and chips and then come in and thought that he'd robbed the safe and then put the fish and chips and the money in the suitcase. But because of what happened, he may have panicked and obviously left without his fish and chips. So the police did go to the fish and chip shop, which was about two doors down, and they gave a very vague description of a man, sort of a young man aged between about 22 to 25, with short brown hair, about 5'5", I think. But, that described half the young fellows in Auckland.
Yeah. So they really didn't seem like they had many leads at all.
No. And certainly this guy would have, disappeared within the throng of all the people leaving work.
Any witnesses or any other kind of stories that the police could follow up on?
No, and they did, spend a fair bit of time and publicity and asking people to come forward who were in the area at the time, but no one did. There was one chap who came forward a few weeks later to say that he was at a pub in Auckland, and he overheard two other chaps talk, and and they were saying that they had, they were, well, I don't know whether they were boasting, but they certainly said that they had taken out a loan with Mr. Blomfield and they didn't have the resources to pay him back, so they were going to go back to the store to see if he could, they could arrange a deal, and Mr. Blomfield allegedly said no, no deal, and they beat him to death. But you know, that sighting, or that witness sighting alone made quite a few headlines, but they couldn't track down who made those comments.
So pretty quiet then, trying to find this killer, and then a month later something happens which may be connected.
Yeah, and this is a real bizarre story. So a month later, a chap went in with a heavy bar wrapped in newspaper into the BNZ Remuera branch at lunchtime, and I mean, he chose that time because there was only one teller there, and that was the assistant manager, Mr. Youngs. And he produced a letter for Mr. Youngs to read, and Mr. Youngs started reading the letter, and out of the corner of his eye saw this chap, the customer, raise his arm, and as he looked up, this iron bar came smashing down on his head, and Mr. Youngs was propelled back. And the thing that, well, I found quite amazing was out of his pocket, Mr. Youngs, the assistant manager, pulls out a small revolver which he was carrying, and shot twice at the would-be robber. And that was amazing because you know, I had no idea that you know, bank staff, you know, had access or were allowed to use guns. But I'm guessing that because it was in the Depression, and you know what was happening overseas with Bonnie and Clyde, and you know all of the armed robberies, that that our authorities allowed bank staff to you know, to carry weapons. So Mr. Youngs fired twice, and the robber staggered out and collapsed and died on the ground. So
Jeez,
the police
pretty, pretty good shot, seeing it just being hit over the head with a steel bar.
Well, that's right. I mean, he did have to go to hospital. He did suffer quite bad concussion. But yeah, I know that the first shot he was able to fire reasonably point blank, but had missed. But it wasn't until he sort of fell back and let one over the counter that he actually got the guy. So he shot him without actually really seeing him. And yeah, the guy died. So the police you know, made some inquiries and managed to track down who he actually was. So he was a young Australian chap called Oswald Colton, who was aged 25.
And this is the would-be bank robber.
Yes, that's right. Yep. So the bank robber. So Mr. Colton was 25, and he hailed from a well-to-do family in rural New South Wales, where they had a sheep farm, and he came over to New Zealand to work on a farm. And amongst the possessions found in his house was a bogus flying license, and a lot of the people he had told, he had these grand ideas of trying to get sponsorship to for finance to fly from England to Australia, trying to beat Charles Kingsford Smith's world record. And he even went to the media to see if he could get sponsorship by selling his story, but it worked out that his pilot's license was actually fake, and it was fabricated during a time that he spent time in prison for fraud over in Sydney. So it wasn't a real pilot's license. So there was also a handwritten movie script called Scotland Yard that he had handwritten himself, and it was about a bank robbery. So, you know, I don't know whether you know, he was trying to, you know, get into character for his movie idea but certainly on
quite
the day
a character.
That on the day he left he left his landlady, who he owed money to, and he went in and said, I'll be back with some money. So, and he never came back.
So does it seem likely that Colton, the guy shot trying to rob the bank, was the same guy who'd killed Arthur Blomfield?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of thought and a lot of speculation with that. Now, Blomfield's killer was allegedly about 5'9". 5'9", that's right, and Mr. Colton was only 5'5", so there is a little bit of difference in height there, but certainly the other aspects to his character, like the brown hair and slim build, it certainly that certainly does match. And also the main fact being that Colton Colton had wrapped a steel bar in a newspaper, and that's what he used to bash Mr. Young's at the bank with. And it's the same manner of what he attacked Mr. Blomfield with, or somebody attacked Mr. Blomfield with a steel bar, perhaps. I don't know whether it was wrapped in newspaper, but the manner of which was very, very similar.
And as they looked into his past, he emerged as quite an interesting character, and actually had a bit to do with the community. I think he was a rugby league player, had impressed the various people who he had met, and was, I've got this note here, immaculately groomed. This is the killer.
Yeah, well, that's in fact how the police were able to identify him. Like, he was dressed in a flash suit, and it was dry cleaned at the local barber's place, and so there was a ticket in there, and the police went to the barber's place, it was used as a drop off point for dry cleaning, and the barber said, "Oh, you'll look, that's Mr. Colton. He comes in here about once a week." And so Mr. Colton, he was immaculately groomed all the time, and he came in for a haircut once a week. He had manicured fingernails, so he was very neat person, which it was probably an oddity for 1931 Auckland.
So what's your gut? I mean, were there any other suspects for that pharmacy killing?
No, there was nothing more. And certainly, having a look at the reports, it seems that the police stopped their investigation into Blomfield's murder after the Colton incident. So I'm of the opinion that the police certainly then believed that Colton was the killer of Mr. Blomfield. The same reason he went in to rob the safe. There is a bit of a difference in that both the witnesses, the fish and chip shop owner, the fish and chip shop owner was shown a photo of Oswald Colton, and he believed that he was the man that purchased fish and chips on the afternoon that Mr. Blomfield was murdered. However, the fish and chip shop owner and Mr. Pollock, the customer, were adamant that the killer was dressed in a blue suit, whereas there was no blue suit found in Mr. Colton's possession. He habitually, dressed in either a grey suit or a fawn-coloured suit. He could have had a blue suit and disposed of it, but certainly the people who knew him would say that they've never seen him in a blue suit before.
So what do you make of it?
Oh, look, it's difficult to say. Part of me thinks that, yes, Colton was the killer, but then it could easily, might not have been either. Certainly, as I mentioned before, a murder was a capital offence. So if the person who bludgeoned Mr. Blomfield, and Mr. Blomfield died, obviously, then this guy's sitting on a capital charge and he would be hanged. So anybody would want to do what they can to cover it up and go to ground. I don't think that the killer would be so brazen enough to go and commit another crime in broad daylight less than a month later.
Thanks for listening to Crimes NZ with me, Jesse Mulligan, and thanks to Scott Bainbridge for sharing his research with us. Crimes NZ is produced by Melita Tull, Charlie Drever, Sam Hollis and Ayanna Piper-Helian. And thanks to Liz Garten and EP of Podcasts Tim Watkin for getting it out into the world of podcasts. Crimes NZ is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and most other podcasting apps. Make sure you follow us to automatically get each episode as it drops.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.